Welcome to Django Chat. If you're listening in the podcast, we're now doing video. We're on YouTube.
You must check out the video. Will's got this amazing soft backlight. You must check it out. It's just gorgeous.
I'm also wearing glasses. I had to get glasses for the first time in my life 2 weeks ago. And it's
so is that like little presbytopia? Is that yeah. what they call it?
That's, yeah, well, it's two things. Yeah, good for you. It's like you're married to a doctor or something. So, yes, so...
reading about the English revolutionary period in the 17th century, and a lot was about Presbyterian church leaders imposing their particular ethic upon the rest of the country. So it means elder. The presbyter bit means elder.
Oh, I wondered that. So there you go.
Elder vision, presbyter.
Okay. Well, now we've just lost half our audience, but that's okay.
Yeah. Welcome back to Django Chat, podcast on the Django Web Framework.
Django Web Framework. So we've been off for the summer. We're back trying new things. And 6 years in, almost 7 years in, we're just going to mix it up. We're going to do videos. We're going to do guests, not guests. Just have fun with it. So the big news, we'll go back to our regular cadence of twice a week or every 2 weeks, fortnightly. As they say.
Well, no, there's a perfect word for it. If only it was internet.
Yeah. Well, but nobody says it in the US, unfortunately. Yeah. Like you sound pretty pretentious to say it to American.
Yeah, no, if you were American.
I mean, it wouldn't bother you. You could say it, but when I say it, it sounds
when I say it, that English, that's lovely.
I know, right? Yeah. All right, so let's dive in. So we're going to talk about, we're back. DjangoCon US just happened last week, which I was at, and I was live texting you the whole time. Yeah. So there's some things to talk about, APIs maybe coming into Django and other things. And we're going to do our ads. So we're very thankful to have a sponsor, Hacksoft, your Django development partner, Beyond Code. We're going to talk about them a little bit later. Both of us had a chance to spend some time with them at DjangoCon Europe in April.
Yes.
So Carlton, summer, go. What was the summer like? We haven't, without the podcast, we don't talk like we used to. You know, this is just kind of an excuse for us to... texting only gets so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, normally you text me when I'm about to go to bed, and I text you, and you're still.
I know.
It just doesn't work. It was good. Like the summer here is long because the kids finish school the last week of June, and they don't go back till the second week of September, and so that it's a long break. But I really enjoyed it. We were busy over the summer. I could spoil this there. We'd had Google Summer of Code coming on. We were getting ready for, helping to get some of the features in there for Django 6.0, which we'll talk about in a minute. But it was just a nice relax. It was quite busy. I had to take August, July was very busy. I had to take August a little bit more on the back burner because I just needed some rest so that I could arrive now in September and actually be fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So you feel fresh?
I feel surprisingly lively. I mean, I was away. I had a week's holiday with my eldest in first week of September. He wants to go to university in France. So we did a lightning tour of French cities. It was wonderful. I got back and I was quite tired. I mean,
And that's all those, for several years, you've been studying French on Duolingo and stuff, right?
Yeah, so. No. I mean, it's just like 10 minutes a day. I mean, and it works. Yeah. I mean, it's not the quickest way of learning a language, I suspect. And it may not be the best way of learning a language, but I could have been playing Candy Crush in that time and I wasn't.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's not your first romance language. So it's a little bit of...
Yeah, they're all the same.
Well, that's good. It's nice to see you back. I'm just staring at my notes and trying to remember,
What did you do in the summer?
What did I do? I had to think about it. So people at DjangoCon US told me there's an updated version of Bingo for this podcast where we have to mention Jeff Triplett, and I have to say I work at PyCharm. So I'll get that out of the way.
You got those done early.
But since I work at PyCharm JetBrains, I travel and going to conferences. So I got to go to EuroPython in Prague for the first time. Beautiful city. I was at the booth, so a little bit, stuck there, but also had a lot of conversations with people. I can't say I saw a ton of the city, but it's a work trip.
I'm looking forward to being a teeny bit older when the kids have moved on to their next level. They're all teenagers now, and they move on to their next level, and they're less slightly more independent, and I can become kind of old man of the European conference scene. I've never been to EuroPython, but it always looks amazing.
No, it was great. It's big. It's a lot of, unsurprisingly, there's a different group. There's not a lot of overlap between the US tour and the Europe tour, right? It's just like Yeah. No, it was beautiful. And actually, I was struck by, there's a river that runs through Prague. So I could go along it every morning for a run. And Chicago is actually, in a way, similar to that because there's a big river near where my hotel and the venue was, except Chicago is like 50, 100 story buildings in Prague, right, a little bit more manageable. But you can walk along and there's cafes and it's really, really nice. In September.
You sent me a picture of like these ice tunnels that they've turned into bars.
Houses. In Prague. I was running by that with a colleague in the morning and we're like, what is that? You know, because it looks over 100 years old and now they have these beautiful cafes and bars in it. I was like, they surely didn't make it, you know, and if this is the opening, there's these glass doors. So they open them like this so you can walk on the side. So yeah, amazing city. Really good food and everything. I have this new setup I'm trying to get going. What else? You were invited, but you were busy. There was a Django 20th episode on Talk Python. So Adrian Halavati, Simon Willison, Jeff Triplett, Thibaut Colas, our president, and me, even though I was like, don't put me on here. Like, but you couldn't attend, Carlton, so I got your spot. So that was really nice to sort of go back memory lane a little bit between Simon and Adrian and Jeff. To be fair, since they have been there from the beginning.
Yeah, the conversation was really good there. I think we should link that in the show notes. It's a nice, it was a nice chat. So if you didn't catch it, like I'd recommend it's worth the, you know, half hour and 2x certainly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think a lot of Django today, you can see in, you know, Adrian talked about this, the fact that it was built for a professional use case and his and Simon and Jacob's design philosophies and just personalities, you know, are really clear. In the framework today. So Jacob Kaplan-Moss was at DjangoCon US, which was great. And he's on the board and very involved. What else? UV live stream with Michael Kennedy. So that was through PyCharm. Yeah. That was fun. A little nerve wracking to talk for an hour, but I was the host.
Well, the great thing about Michael is you can just sort of get him going and he'll...
I mean, he's such a pro. Yeah. Yeah. No, he's wonderful. Django survey is coming up. That'll be released soon.
We're going to do a show about that, are we?
We're going to do a show about that. Yeah, we'll do. I think the next show we'll do on that. So the results are ready. I got to do a blog post. Hopefully, I took some videos at DjangoCon US.
Because the Python survey came out as well, right? I mean, I wanted, you know, mention JetBrains, but I really think JetBrains do a wonderful thing. They put an awful lot of effort into it. It's a big thing and it's every single year. Python survey, Django survey. I just, you know, little round of applause for the effort and commitment that JetBrains has shown for that over the years, I think.
I mean, it's a big reason why I'm here because when I was on the board, I worked with them on the Django survey and then also the annual PyCharm promotion, which will come out soon too, where you get, 30% off and all the proceeds go to the Django Software Foundation. So that's historically been a quarter of the annual budget. So it's a big thing. And then lastly, my personal site, I've been trying to write a little bit. So wsvincent.com, and it's a Ruby Jekyll site. That's how you know it's old. So I've been trying to vibe code it just because I wanted something that matters, but I can sit back and just be like, all right, agents, like do your thing. So yeah, it's got new search and...
As well, if I had to maintain a Jekyll site, I think I would vibe code it too.
Oh, right? I'm not going to dump on... I'm not going to dump on.
No, it's just
It is every time. I always have to update gems and, I should use one of the Python versions. I just can't be bothered and...
Use Django.
I know. I will. But I have learnjango.com, which is a Django site, which has all that and... And surprisingly, hasn't broken or anything. That's doing great, despite my neglect. So that's going up and to the right.
There's your Django tagline, isn't it? Does great despite your neglect.
Yeah. So anyway, busy summer. And let's talk about DjangoCon US. So that was last week, and I was there the whole time. Maybe I'll tee it up, and then you can, or I don't know. We can discuss it. I was texting you throughout the whole thing, but we were both very excited.
It was almost like I was there. I mean, I was,
I know. I missed you at the conference. It's not the same.
I missed being there, but with current circumstances, I wasn't able to travel to the US. So.
And normally we play that game if someone comes up and says something nice about the podcast or something, and we can kind of, you know, hand them off to each other as a next step, but
take a cutout of me, you can just put out a
sign. I need to bring a sign that just says Carlton says hi. Because I would be like, Carlton, I talked to so-and-so. You're like, oh, say hi. Sometimes I showed the phone. I showed the,
I actually had said hi. Yeah.
Yeah. So Carson Gross, creator of HTMX, gave the keynote, and this was, did I link? Yeah, I wrote, actually, I just wrote up a written review of the conference, which we'll link to, where, I mean, it's a great talk. It was about this Japanese designer at who worked at Nintendo and his concept of withered technology, which is sort of an older version of boring tech. And yeah. Carson made a lot of great analogies between HTMX, hypermedia, and, you know, just with experience, you don't have to, you can focus on sort of delight rather than just technical brilliance for the sake of technical brilliance.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, when I heard that I'd already decided I wasn't going to travel to the US when they announced the keynotes, but when I heard it was Carson, I was like, ah, that really stings. You know, like to miss the conference, to miss the community, yes, yeah. Those things. But then to miss Carson, who with HTMX is, you know, I've been building a product the last 2.5 years. I've been using HTMX since day one, and I'm just so on board with it. And it's, for me, it's so right, and it so speaks to what the world, the web is and can be, and it fits so well with Django.
Yeah.
And to not be able to, you know, and I banter with Carson online, and to not be able to meet him was like, ah, I can't believe it.
I know. Well, he's a Java guy and JavaScript. So he's a professor in Montana. So he doesn't do much Django himself, but you know, this HTMX is there and the Django community has adopted it almost more than anywhere else. So yeah, it was good. And then
I saw HTMX is going to be in Drupal now, and it's, you know, I think it's
it just makes so much sense for a progressive web experience that doesn't go full single page application. You know, I mean, it's unfair to say it's the new jQuery, but it's a little bit, you know, it's just like sprinkling your inner activity. And
my talk at either last year was about, you know, about my experience of building with both HTMX and Alpine the last couple of years. One of the points I make is I haven't had this feeling since the old days of using jQuery. Just, you know, make your selection, tag on a, you know, do these long lines of jQuery, and it was wonderful. It was this glorious.
Yeah.
Well, with Alpine and HTMX, I've really found that again, and it's just joyful.
Yeah, it's so efficient. I mean, just whatever you need. I'm just looking at my notes here.
There's a few. I mean, I'm interested in people's different takes here, because there's the like Data Star, and there's Alpine Ajax, which is another one, which kind of package up HTMX. And I'm interested by the people who use those different options as to what they're getting, which HTMX doesn't offer. I think maybe they're slightly higher level. They perhaps have better encapsulations of some things that you have to do manually with HTMX. I'm not sure, because I haven't really dug into.
Well, I think we could get Carson to come on. I had some great hallway chats with several people talking about, you know, the combination of HTMX and Alpine, and there's a couple edges there. Like if you want to go automatic back refill, I don't know. I took some notes on it, but he's a smart guy. He's got lots to say.
So with HTMX, if your HTMX is outside your Alpine component and you take your Alpine component out and you pull a fresh Alpine component in, that all works fine. But if you've got an Alpine component and inside it, there's a little bit of HTMX that you swap out and put in some fresh bit, Alpine can get confused. You have to sort of either use the Morph plugin so that Alpine knows, or you have to go back to Alpine and say, hey, by the way, init this bit of tree here.
I wrote it down somewhere. There was some tip about with the back button, and he was saying you can just turn history off. So he's got lots of tips. I was sitting in a group of people who've been using it much more seriously than I have. So anyways, we'll try to get him on. But yeah, great talk. I think aligns with the ethos of Django. I mentioned to you, I think it's worth saying. So in Django land, HTMX is the hotness, like all the top talks the last 2 years. If you look on YouTube, for Django cons, HTMX is the top one. And yet I walked out with someone from that talk, and they turned to me and said, I'd never heard of HTMX before. So
this is like the echo chamber, right? Is we're all online and we're doing this and we're talking to each other, and no one in the wider ecosystem's got any idea what's going on.
No, exactly. So this, I'm trying to just get more comfortable with repeating myself, you know, say it in the podcast, put it in the newsletter, put it in a thing. You know, I mean, give people the chance to cut me off, because I hate people telling me something I've already heard. But, you know, meet people where they're at. It is. Yeah.
so And hang on, but now I wanted to ask you, because your talk, you gave a talk as well, and you're at AI talk, which we're going to, but you were Ron right after Carson. It's like Carson Coffee Break Will, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How was that?
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, so that I mentioned in my blog post, so he gave the keynote and everyone was there, and then it went two tracks. So there's an upstairs and a downstairs, which is unavoidable with the venue. It was maybe the only thing that if I could wave a wand and change the, you know, going up and down the stairs meant it was a little divided. Mm-hmm. So, but I still had, you know, I had half the audience. It motivated me to put HTMX in my demo because I was like, ooh, this will be. So yeah. I was quite pleased. When I submitted the talk, I thought I would just do a version of the DjangoCon Europe one I did, which was Django for Data Science. But then I was like, ooh, Django for AI, because, you know, kind of what's the difference? But then that got me thinking, oh, I have to. Yeah. So it's 2/3 new. So basically the whole DjangoCon Europe talk where I talked through a lot of the code, I really didn't want to talk through views files, you know, 20 line views files. So it's sort of a two-parter on classic machine learning. Which was the DjangoCon Europe one, talking about how quickly you can train a model. I use the Iris data set, get a joblib file, and then Django is perfect to deploy that, throw some forms, store the data in a database. I think more data science people should know that Django's there for them. You could clone the repo and vibe code almost any model in there. And I think that would help. And then the second part, I went on this tangent about LLMs, you know, not lecturing people on what they are, but just like a little bit, and then talking about how Django can integrate with them, because they are meaningfully different, both in terms of inference costs. So serving them, you know, it's a whole new economic paradigm, right? It's something, I can't get hard numbers on this because they're all private, but it's at least 10 times more computationally expensive to talk to a chatbot than it is to do a Google search. And right now they don't monetize, you know, they only monetize around 2%, you know, so. I resisted going into an economics kind of thing on it, but it's wild. I mean, the amount of build out, both to train, but even more so to serve these LLMs is unprecedented for sure.
Yeah, it's the one thing that really concerns me is the massive contrast between the revenue, the CapEx expenditures, and then the revenues. And it just seems that the revenues are, you know, maybe they've got a dream of how it will come, but it just as a sort of, you know, looking at it from afar, I'm like, ooh, that stinks.
Because it was the perfect thing for these big companies in that, you know, Transformers in 2017, then 2020, the scaling laws, which to be fair are not physical laws of the universe. They're just more political economic laws, similar to Moore's law. It wasn't like a physics thing, but it seemed like you just slammed these LLM models with as much data as possible, as much compute as possible. And, brain dead. What's the third thing?
Data,
compute. There's a third one. Everything comes.
Okay. Well, we can put it in the show notes.
I guess parameters. That's sort of the same thing. So parameters like knobs you can turn. And so that's like the billions of parameters. And it's probably trillions for GPT-5 and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's all interesting. I mean, it's different. I think for me, I learned a lot researching the talk, and I think most web people aren't AI developers. So it's good for us to have a sense. I mean, one of the interesting things about parameters is that's like when you start, you pick a number of parameters, the things you can turn. They get, you know, more and more generally is better, but you can't just put a quadrillion, because if you have too many and you don't have enough data, then it just repeats verbatim the training data. So that's why you need more data.
So in small models, they used to call overfitting.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, GPT-2, now I'm getting on a rant, but GPT-2 was trained on Reddit stuff, just like almost on a laptop, was Reddit posts with three votes or more. And so you focused on the inputs and then the outputs took care of themselves. Now it's just vacuum up everything. And so it's a mess, right? And so what they're doing is they're adding a filter on top of the model to make it available for public consumption. But to train that filter, they're using human-led reinforcement learning. I'm getting that wrong. But they're getting humans in the global south to like review horrific stuff to put a filter on top because the inputs are kind of garbage. So it's, you know, it's all the old colonialism stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Let's
not get on that. But the cool part, I thought with the demo was I wanted to, I'm quite keen on local models. So Olama, you can pull in whatever local model you want. And I rigged up a demo. There's a GitHub repo where you can pull in whatever model you want and then use server sent events to have a chatbot that streams the tokens, which is the key part I wanted. And yeah, just to show Django as is can do a lot. Like, you don't need async views for it. You don't, you know, I also played around with HTML streaming, which is kind of cool.
But then you would need an async view in that case. You would probably use an async view.
To be fair, I need to like research that a little more. But more importantly, I used HTMX. So I had like an interactive demo, which I thought
just
was
cool. Follow up with from Carson's talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Just one minute before we move on. I read up your write-up of your talk. I'm interested to watch the final thing. I think the demo is super cool. But you had this preliminary chat where you're kind of placing Django again in a wider context. And you had this nice slide about how the web is not the same as API endpoints. And
yeah.
I think that's really the drum we should be banging, right? Is that, yes, okay, you spin up an API endpoint, you connect it to your IAM, but a web application has so much more going on for it. And that's our strength.
Yeah, and we're not, you know, Django is not going to be used on the hot path for inference with VLLM, which is like your, and fast API. But yeah, you need everything. And you can kind of do it with fast API. There's authentication. But yeah, like, we're not on this straight path, but everything else you need, payments, authentication, database, ORM, Django's sitting right there. There's a EuroPython talk that I think just came out where someone talked about combining all of them. So I think it's a real opportunity for Django. I think, and I'm trying to learn more about it and think about how we can meet them where they are, because one of the other big points was this new generation of young Python AI developers don't know the web, and they think it's just an API endpoint, and they either feel trapped or just assume that's all there is to it. But, you know, to Carson's talk, like withered tech, like Django's here for 20 years. Like, we've got a solution, maybe not the best solution, but we've got a solution to a lot of these problems. So I want to do more around, we're at the end of the day, we're going to be calling these LLMs. We're not going to be running them ourselves. Yeah. But what does that look like? You know, sometimes it's streaming. A lot of times it's not. It's just medical records, right? Just send it over, get a response. It's feels like it could just be kind of standard REST API stuff.
Yeah, maybe with a bit of waiting involved. You were saying that Carson was talking about young developers not even knowing what HTML forms were.
Right. Well, I felt a kinship, not just because I think we're around the same age, because I was trying to bang some of those drums. And he said, and I agree, that the onus is on us with gray hair. You know, I got a little bit to try to meet people where they're at. You know, it's not because, again, I also going to these Python conferences, I had another slide about, like, I was like, well, why not Django for your web needs? And they're like, well, Django's slow, Django's old, and it's hard to learn. And it's hard to know where to start.
Well, I'd start with some great set of books. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, no, and maybe some books that, you know, have examples of this in their next editions.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity. I think, you know, it's great to go to these conferences, but we also have to remember it's 300 people out of probably 3 million or something that use Django. And, you know, just because we all know what HTMX is and we all know these things, we need to speak outward a bit more. So hopefully this, you know, the video version of our podcast, and maybe I'll do some videos to reach people where they are.
Audience.
Well, we don't need to do that, but we want to just make it accessible how people, all right, let's move on. Wait, and do you want to do the mid-roll, Hacksoft, who's sponsoring? Do you want to read
out? Yes, I would love to. Hacksoft is your development partner beyond code. From custom software development to consulting, team augmentation, or opening an office in Bulgaria, they're ready to take your Django project to the next level.
Yes, and we're very grateful to them to be sponsors of podcast, as they've been in the past. Also, the Django newsletter, and general, just good citizens of the Django community.
Yeah, and they have great site, great guide on, you know, how to do Django, great Hacksoft style guide, which I think is a wonderful thing. They've been around for years. It's beyond the sponsorship. I think Hacksoft is a great team.
Yeah. Yep. So thanks to them. All right. Now we're going to let you talk. So Google Summer of Code. So Carson mentioned he was really excited about template partials.
Yep.
I'm
super excited. So, you know, how can I say? Like, templates are... So I sat down to start the new project back in the day. Like, Django 4.2 was around. So early part of 2023 when I stepped down from the fellow role.
Yeah.
And I'd read the essay on the HTMX website about template fragments, which I call partials for, you know, slightly different reasons. But they go by this fragments or partials name. And I was like, we need that. And there was a couple of options in the ecosystem. There's one called Django Render Block, I think. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it had a render block to string function, which you would call a block. You know, you'd say you get a named block from your template, and you you get it, and you'd render that, and you could return that. But you had to adjust the view flow. You had to instead of returning a template response with just the template name and the context, and then, you know, whatever magic Django does to actually render that behind the scenes for you, you would render the template and then pass it to an HTTP response, and you return that. And it's quite disruptive to your view logic. Like the generic views, you're basically rewriting every one. And that wasn't what I wanted. And so I built Django template partials to a slightly different take on that, which is how I wanted it, and integrated that with the template loader. And I sort of announced it at DjangoCon Europe in 2023 in Edinburgh. And it was like, you know, the response was phenomenal. And so, you know, a whole LTS cycle later, we've got Farhan, who's come in and done the Google Summer of Code project to merge it into Django Core. And over the summer, he was working hard and some nice tricky issue. The template partials have been working fine for 2 years. No issues at all. I first released it. We had a bit of feedback, changed the API, et cetera. Been working perfectly for everybody. But that step up into getting into Django, it's like, there's quite a lot of resistance there. And enough resistance such that I'd kind of cracked open a branch and started off at it a couple of times, but then gone, I'm too busy. I haven't got time to do this. And I think without the Google Summer of Code project, it probably would have just sat there indefinitely. But with the Google Summer project, Farhan has brought it up to scratch, merged it in, and it will be part of Django 6.0, which is feature freeze tomorrow. Tomorrow, as we record this, today as we release it, and it will be, the alpha will be there, and then the final release will be in December.
Yeah, it's exciting. So, you know, fellows don't have to just retreat to a cave. They can, you know, do what you've done, right? You said right after 5 years, you had all these ideas. Because I remember you just like sort of launched it. And I said, wow, like that's quite a thing. And you were like, well, I just did it in an afternoon. But you've been stewing on it for years.
Forever. Like, so Neapolitan, which is the other project I released at about the same time, I'd literally been sat on that for 8 years, like as a sort of thing that I would need. And so when it came to, oh, do you know what? I'm going to have to end up back in business, writing fresh generic views for lots of models. No, I'm not doing this the old way. I'm doing it. I'm putting Neapolitan in place and I'm doing it.
And it's quick CRUD views is the tagline for anyone unfamiliar.
What does Neapolitan allows you to do? It allows you to define your model, define your CRUD view, to specify some fields, and then all of a sudden you've got the create view, the list view, the retrieve view, the update view, etc.
When you've talked about, it's really almost a matter of flow, like where you start with that and then you customize it instead of having to build it up and customize as you go. So it's just a different of a approach. But we're we kind of do the same, you know, like David Hennemeyer Hansen gave a keynote a couple weeks ago talking about CRUD monkeys. And I'm not sure if I love using the word monkeys, but I take his point about we're just kind of doing CRUD and there's nothing wrong with that. And then there's just tweaks to it. And so this speeds things up for it those inclined.
Yeah. I see some people who are very into software architecture criticizing people who are earning six-figure salaries just writing CRUD apps. And it's like nobody makes a six-figure salary just writing a CRUD app. You get the six-figure salary for the bits after you've got the CRUD app in place.
Right.
And what I love about Neapolitan is I can bootstrap it in seconds and I've got the basic CRUD structure in place. And then as I'm experimenting, as I'm evolving the application, as I'm getting into the details of what makes it a valuable piece of software rather than something that could be automatically generated, then I can customize and it's got all the right hooks.
It's got the scaffolding. But that's sort of...
You get the salary for what comes after the CRUD, not the CRUD itself.
Well, and I think even more so with LLMs, you can, you know, they're great at boilerplate code for Django anyways, because it's so well documented and so mature. But yeah, it's what next is what matters. CSP? Well, let's talk about it. So Django 6.0, there's three killer features. I'll let you.
Well, so the big one, I think the big headline feature has to be CSP content security policy as being merged into core. So for years, it's been this third-party package, Django CSP, which has enabled you to set this. And CSP is like, it's a defense in depth measure. So if you use you know, the template language correctly and you do all your auto escaping, you don't turn that off, more or less safe from most cross-site scripting attacks. Like, it's very hard to smuggle one in. But as a defense in depth measure, CSP enables you to say things like, only load JavaScript from the same domain as the application comes, or only from the same domain as the application and this one other specific domain that I've told you about. So if by some accident you've unescaped script tag does make it to the page, the browser will see the unescaped script tag. It will say, no, this domain, this, you know, evil.com isn't included in the content security policy as a source for scripts, so I'm not going to load it. So it's kind of a defense in depth measure. It's massively complicated. It's like, there's just so much to it.
And well, it's nothing you'd want to do on your own, right? Batteries, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly that. It's nothing you want to do on your own. You do not want to be implementing CSP protection by yourself. And Django CSP, the third-party package, has been maintained well for years, but there was a period when it wasn't. And so what's happening there? And for it to be in core, I think it's, you know, you talk about battery. I think it's one of the hard batteries that it's good that Django provides. And so I think it's a major feature, and I'm quite excited to be using it. I was joking on Mastodon the other day about whether it's too early to deploy 6.0 before even the feature freeze, deploy it to my production environment. And it's because I want to move to the in core CSP protection rather than the third party package. And I don't really want to have to wait till December to do that. So I'm now thinking, okay, so can I release this early?
Well, and you're still the lead, if not the solo developer on your regular work. So
you don't need
permission.
Yeah, and I can run Django's test suite against, you know, a particular commit on the branch, and know that that's as good as a release commit, and I can be happy with it. So that's not a problem for me. So that's the main one, I would say. And then the next big feature is, I think that we're going to merge the backend, the interface for Django Tasks into Django itself. So Django Tasks is this was this proposal from Jake to merge or to create a background task queue for Django. So, you know, if you want to send, the classic example is you want to send an email, and sending an email might take a few seconds by the time you connect to the server and do all those things. So you don't want to do it in a request. You want to take the request, put the task to the side and say, I'm going to send that later, return the response quickly to the user, and then have a worker in the background that can send off the email or generate the PDF or whatever the background task is. That's been in development for a cycle now. And the interface bit of it will be merged into Django in 6.0. You'll still, to actually use it as a background task worker, you'll still need to use a third-party package where the database backend. So the default option will be to store tasks just in your database. So you write, do this task to your database, and then the worker fetches it from the database and does it. That's still going to be a third-party package. You're going to need to install that as an extra. And that's just to give it time to mature and to make sure that it meets it's tested widely enough to meet Django's stability guarantees. The last thing we need to do is merge it very quickly and then find that it's flawed in some way that causes problems to existing deployments.
Nice. And that's Jake Howard, just sometimes we just go first name on stuff. So I forgot
his surname momentarily.
I looked it up. Sorry, Jake. While you were talking. So very exciting. Actually, and we should mention also, I got a chance to meet Jacob Walls, our new fellow, who was there. So you played a role in that, right?
Yeah, so I'm on the fellowship working group. So we, over July, this was the main reason, I think, why my July was ludicrously busy, was that we had over 100 applicants, which is amazing. And it, you know, of those 100 applicants, we had many which were very high quality. And it just goes to show the strength of Django and where we're at. And, you know, sometimes we wring our hands. Are we okay? Are we doing it? No, it was amazing to see the number of really high quality applications for the fellow role. And we had to narrow it down, and we had to do interviews, and we, you know, it was quite a big process. But yeah. Jacob's going to be amazing.
Yeah, no, he's great. I got a chance to spend some time with him there. And also Natalia Bidar, second of the three, also Sarah Boyce, was there as well. And she was, during the sprints, she was sort of letting him take the lead and scurry around, as I've seen you do for years and years and years. But no, he's a very, very, very smart person. I think it's great that we got him. So one more big thing I want to mention, Django on the Med. So there was talks on this. Paolo Melchiori mentioned this is, I know you're excited about this. I'm excited about this. What's the quick pitch and what do you want to say about it?
Okay, so Django on the Med is Django development sprints this time in Palafrugell, which is my hometown, which is on the Mediterranean coast in northeastern Spain. It's 3 days to get together and work on Django. I mean, my wife said the tagline needs to be not as exciting as perhaps it sounds, because it's geeks in a room.
She's English too, right? In case anyone wondered.
That same dry humor. What is it? It's 3 days to get together and work on Django. Basically, we're going to start eight o'clock till about two-ish. Nice breakfast when you turn up, coffee, some croissants, these kind of things. Make sure that you're fired up for the day. 3 days, and then in the afternoon, do a bit of exploring, bit of socializing, bit more talking about the ideas, you know, and evening meals and all the things, like a conference but without the conference bit. You know, there was a nice post on the Python blog from Lukács, who's the Python developer in residence, saying that the sprints are the best bit, and I'm like, yeah, no, they really are, and that's why you should come to Django on the Med, because it's just sprints. The first day we want to do a roadmap session. So we're going to have a fellow, we're going to have a couple of board members, we're going to have a couple of steering council members. We've got really the absolute A team of, you know, some of my all-time stars are turning up. It's going to be amazing. And we hope to drive forward the roadmap, sketch out some of the ideas. And it's not just like, you know, if I say to you, one of the top community priorities is modernize contrib.auth, right? Okay, well, that just sounds like an absolutely impossible project that we need to get Andrew Godwin and we need to lock him in a cave for 6 months and he'll emerge with the
Kickstarter.
No,
yeah,
that's not how it can be done. We need to have modernized contrib.auth, and we need to break it down and spend some time working on, well, what does that mean? What are the sort of pillars of coming up with a serious plan for modernizing contrib.auth, say, as an example, or, you know, adding typing to Django. Do we want to add typings to Django? Okay, if we do, what does that mean? What are the approachable routes into that? What would an experiment look like? What would all of these questions, which until they're cashed out a little bit, we can't really make progress, which is why, you know, modernized contrib.auth, it's sort of sat there on the back burner for a while, but it's not really made progress. And if we can, then the third step, so the first step is identify the core roadmap items. The second step is to break them down into, you know, something a bit more addressable. And then the third step is, if you've got those identified tasks, then you can put out the call for volunteers. And so for years and years, we've had this problem where volunteers would turn up and they'd be like, I want to help. And it'd be like, well, we haven't got anything to point you at. But if we've had a bit of time to flesh out some of the core roadmap ideas, the things that the community would like to work on, then we can say, look, do you know what? Here are half a dozen identified things which are addressable to a new contributor. Yeah. And it's not that we don't have volunteers. It's that we don't have enough guidance for volunteers.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, and then we're going to have a birthday party. I'm hoping to organize a special birthday party treat for Django. And then more time to just work. I'm going to get, you know, person A and person B in a room, and I'm going to lock them up together with loads of croissants and coffee, and I'm going to say, you're not allowed out until this has happened.
Right. And the idea is, right, to have it twice a year, right? So in
Yes.
Where you are, and then in Pescara in Italy, where Paolo is based.
Yeah, exactly. So the first one just happens to be in Padovigé. Then we're going to do it next year in Pescara. And, you know, maybe twice a year would be good. We've got to think about how it clashes with agenda for, say, DjangoCon Europe and things like that. So we need to, you need to consider. But yes, that's the idea, is to do it, you know, one in Padovigé, one in Pescara. And, you know, maybe we can go somewhere else. If, you know, Cyprus, I know some member of the Django community lives in Malta. We could have Django and the Med in Malta.
I mean, that I'm going to be in Cyprus in 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks.
Right, okay. So you could sound out environment there. We could be Django and the Med in Cyprus. But look, the last time we did a roadmap workshop, Thibaut Colas, who's DSF president, he organized one, and it was a couple of years ago, and it's on the forum. You can search for it. Perhaps we can put the link. But the number two impactful item that came out was to do active developer sprints for, you know, Django's active developers, active contributors. Yeah. And that's what we're doing. We're putting together the active developer sprints. And I want to say to people, if you're a new contributor, if you'd like to get involved, you're welcome to. You don't have to be an established contributor. I'm excited because some of my superheroes are coming to Django on the Met. But I want, you know, you to come if you're like, do you know what? I want to get involved too. Because the other goal is to get the new contributors to come and help them get onboarded and joined with the experienced contributors. And so by the time we've left, those people are, you know, up and running as well.
Right.
And because that's in October, 7th and 9th.
Okay. We'll put the link.
It's in the show notes.
Yeah. Thibaut has, I just pulled up. It's on the forum, but he also wrote a really nice blog post in January 2024 about everything. And yes, active developer sprints was number two.
Yeah, so we're actually doing that. And
Yeah.
The biggest thing is like, okay, if we can do it once, then we can do it, you know, time and time again. And the exact details don't matter so much as, is it possible? Is it feasible? And yes, it is. And we're doing it. It's going to be great.
And it's not a new idea, right? I think Paolo with Plone, I mean, other communities have and do these things because they have the same problem of, you know, the sprints at the end is helpful, but it's not quite enough time. Not everyone's there, you know. 3 days, but also 3 days coming in with ideas as opposed to like the end of a conference. You know, I've seen it takes, you know, the Thursday is helping people get set up and people do stuff. And then Friday, sometimes there's a great burst, but usually it's a little more social.
Goodbye. What's that?
Yeah, starting to say goodbye. Right. Yeah, like in my case, like I left, you know, a lot of people leave on Fridays. So, so it's happening.
I'm really excited about Django and Red. And Parijé it's a pretty nice place, you know.
I'm going to come. I know. You've been to my hood in Brookline, Mass, which is pretty nice, but in a different way.
Lovely. Yeah, lovely. No, I mean, I like that whole red brick thing. And it was autumn when I came and the sun was shining. So it was
Yeah. Wow. No.
I'm excited about Django and Red. I'm on.
All right. So we have to quickly
skip over Zag. I'm not going to move on. We skipped over Zag's keynote on the Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll tee you up.
We've got to talk about that.
Yeah. So actually, I flew out. He's based in Boston. He gave the Tuesday keynote, and we flew out together. And he sort of previewed it for me. And I was, mentioning one of his ideas was bring Jenkins framework into core. And I think I have a little scar tissue from being on the board around that. So I was a little bit like, yeah, we should do something about APIs. I don't know if that's going to work. But he got a really great response. And there was a huge long forum post. And he had a bunch of ideas. So I'll toss it over to you, Carlton. So the general idea, I think, was Django should have an API story. And he was advocating for that being primarily DRF. And I know that second part is not quite what you would say.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with him about the first bit. Like, so the forum post was Django needs an API story or something like that.
Restoration.
And his option three was document the options we've got, which is DRF and probably Django Ninja are the two.
Oh, for sure. Ninja, for sure.
Options. Yes, we need an API story. Absolutely. And yes, we should document the options. And yes, it shouldn't be the case that you discover Django and you can't find on the website easily, you know, what you should do if you just want to, you know, a REST endpoint. How do I do that? That shouldn't be a mystery. You shouldn't have absolutely, we should document all that. But had we merged DRF into Django Core a decade ago or even 5 years ago, it might have been a good idea. But now things have moved on. Like DRF is dated. It's the last generation. And I understand people are using it, but it's like if we just merged that into Core and said this is the Django solution, I think that would be us saying we give up on innovation. We quit. I think there are demonstrate. I mean, Django Ninja shows that much more is possible. And yet, I don't think Django Ninja is the final solution. I think there's all number of reasons why it's not perfect, but it was fresh and it demonstrates just absolutely clearly that the other frameworks out there, the fast APIs, the Lightstars,
using Pydantic, using typing, which fast API does both.
I mean, whether it's Pydantic, I use Katas. So if I want to serialize it, so what's the main problem with DRF? The main problem with DRF is that serializers are last generation. They're slow because basically they loop through the fields that they're given and they loop through the object and they do the get attribute. Whereas if you take Katas, what it does is the first time it comes through to your serialize, it kind of generates code, which is as good as if you wrote it by hand. It's as optimized. So it's kind of native speed, and it's just much, 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 much faster than the REST framework serializers that we know and love. And the Django forms, the same sort of ideas, but forms aren't generally used in performance critical ways, whereas people with APIs, they really often are needing fast serialization because they're doing thousands of records, you know, over the wire as fast as the API can respond. So it kind of matters. And so whether it's Pydantic, whether it's Katas, whether it's message spec, there's the whole, my point is that there is a whole collection of next generation solutions out there, which Django, if we, you know, one of the goals of the DSF is to push the state of the art forward. Well, we don't do that by merging a last generation solution into Django.
Yeah. Right? Well, and I think this is why the conferences and the Django on the Med is important, because it's easy for an idea is brought up, there's a discussion on the forum, and it can feel like people are blocking stuff because they have a different of opinion on how to do it, but they're not saying we shouldn't do it. Right. Yeah. And so this is hopefully getting people in a room, right? So, because nobody wants to be a blocker on this stuff, but it's, you know, the implementation details matter, right? And
absolutely. Like there are developers out there who literally hate Django because of DRF. Right? Now, I know
that assumes they even know about DRF. That's another whole separate.
There are people who are like, I quit Django because of DRF.
Yeah.
Because of the way the serializers are and all of it. And look.
So serializers, yes. DRF, maybe.
Yeah, no,
probably
modern
not.
Serializers, yes. DRF is wonderful, and I spent a lot of time working on it.
Yeah, we should say you have been, and I think still are, a maintainer on it for
a long
time.
Yeah, I'm just now still a maintainer on it. I mean, I pop my head in every so often if I'm needed, but basically I've moved away from it now. But I built an entire career around DRF before I was the Django Fellow, and I built web applications for some of the biggest companies in the world using DRF, and it was a wonderful thing, and I learned so much from it, but it is out of date, and there is no question to that. There is no question of that at all.
Well, and it'd be great if the Django website had something discussing, the different approaches. I mean, my takeaway, like I was talking to a number of people, there's a working group on the website. You know, I think if I had a magic wand, the two things I would do is, well, executive director, which people agree with this. The board actually discussed, they've done... So this is one of the board has done a lot of work around this, and something fell through that they spent a lot of time on. And that's something worth mentioning, because when you're on a board, they spent hours and hours and hours and hours, and then it's just for reasons they can discuss, like nothing bad. It didn't happen. And that can feel discouraging, but it's all important because it gets us close. Like, we need one, we'll find the right person, we'll find the timing, but that is the kind of stuff that I hope the board, and I think and they're doing a much better job than when I was on it, talk about the work that they do, because it's thankless work, it's important work. So executive director, and that was raised numerous times. The second is, I think I told you the idea, so the homepage, right? Like, we can't change everything. I was like, what about a third-party package homepage, right? Like, I could, when I have a moment and I'm truly procrastinating, I'll vibe code. I would like four things on the homepage. Well, what do I want? I want to look modern. We all agree it doesn't look modern. If you look at Media.js, you look at Vue.js, those look, they have colors, more modern. They also have sponsors, boom, on the page, because, that's part of the executive director, getting the money. But then the four things we need is and maybe even just ugly boxes somewhere. We need API and just links to like an API story, CRM, which Django CMS, Wagtail. Like, we have fantastic story. There's other ones. Those are the two big ones. I would like to see a Hello World tutorial on there, you know, just polls. And then AI. And it, maybe it just links to a page where it talks about how you can use Django where it's appropriate, but just an AI story. I think you can't be a web framework in 2025 without an AI story. And I think it's important to say.
The flip side of that AI story is the async story as well. Like, people think, oh, Django can't do async. There was a post recently about why isn't async IO more popular than it is? And like, the sort of headline bit was, oh, Django's async is underdeveloped. It's like, it's really not. The only bit left is the cursors to the actual ORM, right? The rest of it all works. So if you want to do wiring up to an LLM, async views, they're wonderful for you and going to work perfectly for you. But that's not the narrative that's out there in the ecosystem. People are like, oh, no, Django's async.
Well, also, you know, you don't need async for everything, you know, only very specific use cases. And it is sort of interesting that I think that was always the issue with, well, WebSockets with two-way, and async was a great technology, but like, how common was the use case?
Yeah.
And, you know, LLMs are, a use case where some of these things, you know, that's part of the thing. Like, you know, async matters when you are fast API and you're in front of an inference engine.
But it matters if it can wait. So if you want to connect, so if I got a worker that I want to make a call to a remote server, and I'm going to have to wait for that server, or it'll either stream back to me, or I'll have to wait a long time for it to return its response and then return. I want async because I want to be able to wait for that whilst I'm handling other requests on there. You know, while that's happening.
Yeah. So anyways, I'll try to wire something up.
No, do that. I mean, we were trying to do a little bit with that with the third party, with the ecosystem page, the new steering
council. Oh yeah, and we should mention, I'll link to it. Like, it's a fantastic page. It's very in-depth. It's just completely buried. You know, no one can find it. You know, that's a separate thing. People are working on this, right? Search and, you know, have the search bar on the homepage, which right now we don't. It's in the docs, which you have to click to.
So, I mean, I remember when I was a fellow and we were trying to do season of docs, and we were trying to restructure the page. And
I was there.
We just weren't able to get very much achieved. We got some things achieved, but we weren't able to get very much achieved. And I think the website really does need
I still, when I was on the board, would Google for pages because I couldn't find them on the site.
I've literally opened the Django repo to find where the source code is in order to find the correct URL to go to the website at
times. Oh God.
My life. Anyway, let's move on.
All right, let's wrap it up. So we wanted to do two things, I think. So we want to mention a new thing. We're going to mention some projects that we're excited about. So Nano Django, Richard Terry gave, I missed it. So I don't know if it was a talk or a lightning talk.
Lightning talk.
But there's a lot of enthusiasm around this, around just a lightweight Django and, you know, making it not so scary for newcomers. I need to go see his talk. I missed it. Do you have anything
He's got a new site and it's got a little playground on. So I think
nanojango.dev. We'll link to it.
Yeah. I think it must use one of these things that brings Python into the browser to run your Django application in the browser.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all very cool. And he's doing a great job. And I think, you know, if you've got a big application and there's an endpoint which you just can't take down while you update the rest of it, you can spin that endpoint out into a little nano Django side point, and that endpoint can keep serving while you update the rest of the site. You know, it's not just for the hello world getting started examples, but he's doing a really good job pushing that forward and adding the sort of dotting the I's and crossing the T's on these micro Django examples that we've been playing with for years and years.
Yes. Do you want to mention the other two?
Yeah. Okay. So my really exciting one, Adam Hill, DJ Lite, which is a really simple Django application. You just add it to your installed apps and it tweaks your setting. There might be one or two apps, but it tweaks your settings to give you the right setting for SQLite in production. There are talks on this and there's blog posts. Him and Anzi, whose surname again, I can't remember, they've been working on this for a while, and there is now, and as they have in the Rails community, a really it's really plausible that you can serve at least your single user blog application and small pobby applications using SQLite in production, or SQLite in production. I put my business Oh, no, I'm still going to use Postgres, I think.
Oh, but read heavy, it's great.
Yeah, read heavy. And SQLite still doesn't allow concurrent writes, but you can teach it to not error and just wait for the other write to finish and then do your write. And that's good enough for almost all you calls.
And it's also, I'm pretty sure, I believe, like, you know, cell phones, like it's the default in any number of things. Yeah, like, it's not a wild idea.
Most deployed database in the world by, you know, order of magnitude, because it's on every cell phone, every car, every fridge, every, you know, every everything. You know, these vapes, the youngsters have this probably in there. And,
oh, God.
But anyway, the reason why I like DJ Lite is it wraps. Up until this, you had to go and search and you had to read the blog posts and you had to extract exactly what was the right configuration. Whereas now you can just pip install DJ Lite, follow the two-step setup, and you're done.
Yeah.
And I
like UV add, but that's a separate discussion.
Yeah, let's not start that. We've already gone on too long already.
All right, and do you want to mention Jacob's Reef's Django form set?
Yeah, I love that. So the it's what it is a set of really of rich HTML components, which the JavaScript all built in and all the rest, that give you all the, you know, just a whole gallery of form widgets that are more advanced, more elaborate, and you can, you know, and it's all modern, and you can include just the JavaScript for the widgets you need to use and keep your page weights light and all the rest. You don't have to build in the whole library, which is very big. The intro the intro bit of the docs where it talks through the quick start, it's a bit dry and it doesn't really motivate it, but it's a wonderful library. And what I recommend is skip that bit, come back to that when you've go and install it and download a demo and build like one or two of these widgets in action. See how easy it is. So give it half an hour doing that rather than reading the docs per se. And then come back to the explanation in the docs once you've convinced yourself, actually, this is quite cool, because it's a wonderful project. And he's been putting effort into that for years. And it's immensely high quality. And it's, I think, probably for me, the most underrated project in the Django ecosystem.
Wow. That's high praise.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. It's really, really, really good. So anyway,
yeah. Well, he was in Chicago too. I got to spend some time with him, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So last thing, we're gonna try book recommendation. So So on my personal side, I've been trying to do some book reviews, and I've been talking your ear off about Empire of AI. So I've been reading
I'm waiting for your review. I'm quite excited.
Yeah. I know. The Cliff Notes. No, it's really, really good. She's Karen has been giving great video interviews, and it really just ties together a lot of the technical, the cultural, everything else about AI in a way that I haven't seen, even though I've read a lot of these books. So I highly recommend it.
Okay.
And you have one that's a
bit... I'm not the one I sent a photo about earlier. I'm going to mention Refactoring to Rust, which is from Manning. It's a great one. The first chapter is why refactor to Rust. And clearly it's so you can sit with the cool kids at the lunch table, right? Why else? But it has an overview of Rust, which is a sort of second chapter. And there's no way on earth you could learn Rust from that chapter. Like it sort of implies you could, but you couldn't. But if you already have been dabbled with Rust a little bit, it's quite a good chapter to lock in some of the concepts that you might have come across in other books. But it's not a learn Rust from that chapter, I promise you. But it's got chapters on integrating with C, integrating with blah, blah, blah. But the Python chapters are really solid. They show you how to embed Python in Rust and Rust in Python. And they show you about benchmarking, which is just key, right? It's like, I'm making all these changes. I'm using this tech. Am I making anything better? Actually talks about that and shows how you might demonstrate whether you're making things better or not, which is sorely missing in my experience. So anyway, I read some of that over the summer and I was like, yes, that's a quality read. Refactoring to Rust.
Nice. Well, I think that's it. We're going to do our outro. Again, thank you to Hacksoft for sponsoring, your development partner Beyond Code. More about their links in the description. And give us feedback, everyone. Leave a comment on YouTube. Let us know separately. But we're going to try doing videos all fall. We're going to have some guests, but also go topic driven. And the next week, we'll talk about the Django survey and the future of Django.
Okay.
All right. We'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.